ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Hare Krishna. In the lead up to the celebration of Janmashtami, I'll speak on qualities of Krishna as highlighted in Sri Vishnu Sahasranama. When I was here, last time I was speaking on that. Anyone remember what number I was on then? I haven't done so much since then. Now I'm on name 477. The name is Dharma Krit. You've all heard the word Dharma. It's a very important word. What does it mean? Difficult to define exactly. Srila Prabhupada often translates it as religiosity. And krit means making. So, two main meanings of this name. One is he makes his, or he induces his followers to follow dharma. And another one is that he practices it himself. This is the meaning which is given by the Gaudiya Vaishnava commentator on Vishnu Sahasranam, Baladev Vidyabhushan. He teaches dharma for the welfare of all. Another meaning could be that he makes dharma. Dharma is eternal, as is Krishna. But still we say that Krishna, just like we say, the all forms of the Lord, not only forms of the Lord, but the jivas, they're all emanations or expansions from Krishna, but they're all eternal also. Mai vangsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. They're all eternal, but still they are spoken of as expansions. Eko bahu syam, the Chandogya Upanishad says, what the one became many. So it's a conventional way of expressing for the sake of our understanding our relationship with Krishna. It's like the sun and the sun rays and the particles within the sun rays, they're all, of course there's a material example, it's not exactly perfect, but it gives the idea that they coexist simultaneously, but still the sun is the source of all of them. So he makes dharma. Dharmang tu sakshad bhagavat pranitam. It's from the Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken by Yamaraj, often quoted by Srila Prabhupada. What is dharma? What is religion? What is right? What is right is what God said is right. That's the ultimate standard. Now, this is a very important point to understand. There's among various speculative theologians, there is the question is that, well, is what is good because what God says, because of what God says, that makes it good? Or is it that good, there's a natural standard of goodness which God is the personification or exemplification of? It's from the Krishna conscious point of view, this is an unnecessary discussion altogether. All goodness resides in him. Goodness is to be judged according to his pleasure or displeasure, which also brings into perspective the apparent immorality of Krishna. Krishna comes to establish Dharma in this world. Bring me a Bhagavad Gita as it is, please. He comes to establish Dharma in this world, as he famously says, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanya bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam sujami aham. He says that in every age, I come to establish Dharma in this world. Whenever there's a downturn of Dharma or decline, he's already, that statement comes famously in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Earlier in the third chapter, just before that, he says, Name parthasti katavyam chushu lokeshu kinchina nana avaptam avaptavyam varta evacha karmani. O son of Prita, there is no work prescribed for me within all the three planetary systems, nor am I in want of anything, nor have I a need to obtain anything, and yet I am engaged in prescribed duties. The word here is karmani. So the concept of performing karma, swakarma, is inherent in the understanding of dharma. We have the general idea of dharma means religiosity, not committing any sins, but really it's very much interlinked with the concept of swakarma, swadharma in the varnashram system. When Krishna says he comes in every age to establish dharma, that means via the varnashram system. So Krishna himself says this, I don't need to do this. I don't need to follow this. I don't need to do any work, but I do so anyway. Yadi hi aham navarte yang jatu karmanya tandrataha namavartmanu vartante manushyaf parta sarvashaha. For if I ever failed to engage in carefully performing prescribed duties, O Parta, certainly all men would follow my path. Utsideyore me lokana kuryam karma chedaham sankarasya chakarta syam upahanyami mahav prajaha. If I did not perform prescribed duties, all these worlds would be put to ruination. I would be the cause of creating unwanted population, and I would thereby destroy the peace of all human beings. So Krishna says that, well, I perform prescribed duties, I perform dharma as an example for others. If I didn't, then no one else would. But then accusations come, well, what about Krishna? He did this, he did that. I'll get back to that later. I'm planning to do so in quite detail. But the basic point is that Krishna is the standard, what he wants. He is the enjoyer. So real dharma means sarva dhamman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja, to give up all ideas that we may have of dharma, or even shastrically prescribed ideas of dharma that are given for people who haven't come to the real level of dharma, which is to fully take shelter in Krishna with full faith in him. He is the lawmaker. Dharma also means law. It also means the inherent characteristic. Just like fire gives heat and light. That's the inherent characteristic of fire. Water, in its liquid state, dissolves other liquids, quenches thirst, enables us to taste, flows downward. There are various inherent characteristics of water by which we can understand this is water, this is fire. So these are the laws of the universe. The scientists are very busy studying the laws of the universe. But who is the law maker? Srila Prabhupada would often point this out. They give themselves credit for, they call it so-and-so's law. But they're all Krishna's law. Who made the laws? They're so busy studying the laws, and they come up with this conclusion, there's no lawmaker. It's completely absurd, but that's their atheistic mentality. They say, well, they're just natural laws. But then again, whose nature? Who put everything in order? So this all comes from Krishna. So the dharma of the universe, as is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the Upanishads, out of fear of him, the wind blows, out of fear of him, fire burns, and so on. Everything goes under. Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena kaunteya jagadviparivartate. Under Krishna's supervision, everything in the universe runs on. With everything in this world, moving and non-moving, goes on under his direction. So these are the natural, what we would call in modern scientific, or not very scientific terms, the natural laws of the universe. That is the dharma of the universe to operate in the way it does. That is overseen by Krishna. There are many famous verses in this regard. Even the mighty sanyat chakshuresha savita sakala grahanam raja samasta sura murtir shesha tejaha yas yagya ya brahmati sambhrita kala chakro govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. The mighty sun goes in his orbit throughout the sky, giving light and heat to the universe, but does so under the order of Govinda. So everything in the universe operates under him. He's the lawgiver for the natural laws of the universe, plus the laws of human society. There is the law of karma. On the basis of which there are many, many laws given in Shastra, what people should do, what they should not do, how they should act. Yashastra vidimutsrija vartate kama karataha nasa siddhima vapnoti nasukang naparam gatim tasmat chastrang pramanang te karya karya vyavastito gyatva shastra vidhano tam karyam kartam iharhasi. Krishna says, who doesn't follow these laws, that's these laws as are given in dharma shastras, the one section of the Vedic corpus which gives the behavioral laws for human society. Krishna says, anyone who doesn't follow that, then they can achieve neither perfection, nor happiness, nor the supreme destination. Therefore, one should know what these laws are and act accordingly. Otherwise, we're in trouble. At least to save us from degradation, we should follow these laws. The various rules for everyone, not to steal, not to cheat, not to lie, not to cause harm to others, not to take intoxication. And the rules, in Vedic society, the rules, they don't apply equally to everyone. In the modern age, there's the idea that everyone is equal, but in Vedic society, Brahmanas have a very high status. They're not under the law. But on the other hand, they're not to be regulated by the law. But on the other hand, if they break the law, they suffer more. They'll be excommunicated from the Brahmin community. Not that the Kshatriya king will come along and punish them, but they'll be, for serious offenses, they'll be excommunicated from Brahmin society and degraded to the status of a chandala. So those have very high respect, also have very high responsibility. If a Brahmana drinks wine, for instance, then that's very, very sinful. But for a Shudra to drink wine, not so sinful, because he's not expected to be on such a high level. So the sometimes it's said that, well, it's such a hierarchical society with the Brahmins having so many privileges. Yeah, they have many privileges, but they have many responsibilities and restrictions also. So Krishna makes all this. Krishna doesn't try to make everyone all the same because people are different and on different levels. And ultimately what Krishna says is right. There may be various discussions. There are so many discussions in America especially going on for so many years about abortion. That was a big topic in the Republic of Ireland until recently when it was legalized. So discussions have gone on according to biblical injunctions, according to scientific understanding. The scientists say at such and such an age, the fetus is not a person, so it's okay to abort it. And then 1 second after it reaches that age, then it becomes a person, and you can't abort it legally. We don't have to discuss such things because we know from Shastra that abortion is always sinful. It's very, very sinful. So how do we know? Because that's given in Shastra, which is given by Krishna. And in many, many details are given. So if for the establishment of Varnashram society, it's required that we investigate all these things, and if we are to establish them as far as is possible and practicable in the modern age. Regarding divorce in Vedic society, that is allowed for low-class people, actually. Just people who are very low-class. Even Srila Prabhupada said that for Shudras, what can you expect? But for the higher caste, it's out of the question. So different strokes for different folks, according to the law. But one cannot be considered to be very dharmic or religious if you may say, well, it's allowed to drink wine and have illicit sex and all this and this for Shudra. So, okay, I'll be a Shudra. But then it's also said in Shastra, if that one is a Shudra and doesn't make any effort to raise himself above that platform, that itself is sinful. So it becomes quite complex to understand all these things. Therefore, Krishna says, "Savadama paritata amame kam sharanam raja." If we can't understand all these, at least come. If we come to the essence, then ahang tvang sarva pape bhyo moksha yashami mashucha. Come to the essence of fully surrendering to Krishna. And that is the higher level of dharma. There's worldly dharma, which regulates our life in this world so that we don't get very badly degraded, so that we have to go into lower species of life, and which forms a platform on which we can live peacefully in this world for the sake of prosecuting Krishna consciousness, and which overall is favorable for practicing Krishna consciousness, as long as we don't get too much into it. If we don't think that Varnashram in and of itself is the goal of life, but overall it creates a favorable situation. Therefore, Krishna has given that charto varnyam maya srishtam. Krishna says, I have given this system, the Varnashram system. He has made that, he has given that. So Krishna gives, he's dharmakrit, means he gives the system of Varnashram for human society, all the rules that is to be done, and he upholds that also. Just as he upholds the planets, they move in their orbits, the laws of nature work, so on the subtle level also, Krishna upholds the dharma that if people perform sinful acts, they get adverse reactions if they perform pious acts. They get reactions which allow them to go through the illusion of enjoying, of getting sense gratificatory rewards. And ultimately one can get relief from all of this by becoming liberated. So the Chaturvarga, the four aims of human life in Vedic society, are dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. So all of the other three stages, they're all based on following of dharma. Of course, one can practice economic development without understanding dharma, or one can go for sense gratification without understanding dharma. Or even Buddhists and Jains, they don't accept Vedic dharma and they try for liberation. But in the Vedic system, if one cannot even begin to be actually sinless unless one follows the Vedic system, then one's pursuit of economic development, sense gratification, and for those few who aim for liberation, that must be predicated on the on observing normative dharma. Normative dharma means there are rules given for brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudras, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, and women, and those are to be followed as and on the basis of following all that, one can pursue a pious life of economic development or sense gratification, which is not very spiritually elevated, but it's behaviorally and religiously elevated compared to those who have no platform of dharma. And we see that here in the Western world, or where the Abrahamic religions are prominent, they have religion, but they don't have any concept of dharma. The concept of, or the, when we say concept, I mean understanding. It's not that dharma is just a theory, but how Krishna pervades the whole universe, the laws of the universe. There is a set standard and harmony that one who is following dharma, he gets in sync with that. But they have no such idea that there is dharma which regulates the whole universe coming from Krishna. So in the Varnashram system, then these are the four goals: dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Everyone has to follow dharma. Even persons who renounce the world as sannyasis, they're also within Varnashram. And there may be others who they go beyond the Varnashram system. Well, there are two kinds of people who are not humans, who are not within the Varnashram. Most of them are highly degraded, and that's why they're not in the Varnashram system. They don't come up to the standard. And the other is those who are highly elevated. They go above it. They come to the transcendental platform. There's a lot of misunderstanding about this within our own budding or wannabe Vaishnava society. In the modern world, the idea, well, we don't need to follow dharma, we're beyond that. We are transcendental as Vaishnavas, but we see that many of our transcendental Vaishnavas can't even follow the basic principles required for human beings. Four regulated principles, they get the vow to chant 16 rounds, which they take, and then again they don't follow. The rising early in the morning, not so many things. But they think, well, I'm above all this. I don't need to follow. So but actually they haven't come to that level, which means that this Varnashram needs to be preached so people can. And apart from making the four the divisions, two times four, divisions of two times four, instilling in people a sense of normal, righteous behavior. It's otherwise people think, well, chant Hare Krishna, go and drink a beer sometimes, and come back and chant Hare Krishna, and it's all okay, but it's not all okay. This gives rise to the Prakriti Sahajya mentality, which historically really, what do they call that, railroaded, or what do you call that when the train goes off the tracks?
Derailed
the whole movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to a large extent. So this is a very, very important point to understand, and that Krishna is behind it all. Krishna comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to bring us to the highest level, but he's also Dharmakrit. He works in this world to bring us to the regulated level. The fact that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to bring us beyond that doesn't mean that just by taking to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, we automatically go beyond that. Or even if we do, there is a need to establish that in the world for the sake of people who require that. And factually, most, as we can see, most of our devotees we require to follow that. So Krishna makes what is right. He makes dharma and artha and kama and moksha. Even people who are not interested in dharma or have no knowledge of that, they may also get artha and kama by Krishna's Krishna allows that, that people may get, they may become rich, or they may have sense gratification. But without dharma, whatever they enjoy in this life will simply drag them down. So Krishna grants artha and kama to pretty much everyone in this world. Even the non-humans get kama. They get sense gratification. But dharma is meant for elevated human beings. And among them, a few become interested in moksha, in liberation from this world. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes the devotee even beyond the platform of moksha. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam, ba, jagadisha, kamaye, mama, janmani, janmanishvare, bhavatad bhakti, rahaituki, twai. I don't want Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I don't want anything of this world. I don't want wealth or followers or women, name, fame, glory. I don't even aspire for liberation. I only aspire to serve you, Krishna, Jagadish, in all circumstances. It's not a cheap thing. It's not a small thing to say this. To go beyond all material desires, to go to the platform of a Paramahamsa, one who has no longer needs to follow the rules and regulations of civilized human society, because he's already on the platform of love of Godhead. That means he's not going to act sinfully. He has no interest to act piously or sinfully. So it's not a cheap thing or a small thing. It's a very great gift that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given to us. So while Chaitanya Mahaprabhu points toward that Krishna, who is playing his flute to the beautiful blackish threefold bending form on the bank of the Yamuna at Keshi Ghat, we can also remember that Krishna is Dharmakrit, the one who makes the regulations of this world. It's his prerogative. He is the supreme lord of all that be. What he says is right. It's a case of might makes right. He's the almighty. So what he says is right. And actually, if we follow what Krishna says, then we will be right. We will be happy. we will be good, and actual goodness begins with accepting that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His opinion counts, not ours or anyone else's. So this point is to be understood. Krishna induces his devotees to follow dharma. That means that within the heart of the devotee, Krishna gives the good intelligence by which they act in a manner that they can come to him. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. Tesham evanu kamparta mahama jnana jangta maha nashyam yatma bhavasto jnana deepena bhasvata. Krishna says to those devotees who lovingly, constantly engage in my service, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. The ignorance which remains in their heart, I, like with the lamp of knowledge, dissipate that so that they can come to me. So Krishna is within the heart of his devotee, and Krishna directs the devotee so that the devotee can come to him. At every moment, we are faced with decisions. We're not really aware of that most of the time. We become aware of that when we have more of a stark decision. But actually, at all the time, at every moment, we have freedom of choice. For instance, a devotee could be in the kitchen cutting potatoes for making the bhog offering to the Lord. He does have the choice to run outside naked and screaming profanities. He could do that. He doesn't, but we don't have to. At any moment, we can choose to reject Krishna or not follow the path of righteousness. But the path of dharma, is given so that the whole society is given, the path of dharma, varnashram society, so that everyone will follow it, and it just becomes normal. We don't think of doing anything else. We don't think, well, previously I was doing this and that, I wanted to be a rock star, let me go back and find my old electric guitar and pull it out and let me become a rock star. One who's following the path of dharma, they don't think to do that. Krishna gives them the intelligence by which they'll be attracted to him, because they feel very happy doing so. Pratyakshavagamam dharmyam susukham kartam avyayam. One who follows the path of Krishna consciousness, the path of this highest dharma, they become very happy by doing so. And then they rasa vajang risopyasya parangdrishtva nivartate. Then they no longer feel attracted to the petty material pleasures which they aspired for previously. So by various ways, Krishna induces his devotees. Even if a devotee goes astray, Krishna induces his devotee to come back to the path of dharma. There are many examples. A very famous example is that of Bilvamangal Thakur, who was completely straight from the path of dharma. It completely, even though in his previous life he'd been a great devotee, but some residual desires were there which he indulged in his next life. But then he was as if struck by a thunderbolt by the words of Chintamani, his girlfriend, who said to him that if you had as much love as you have for this bag of bones, which you consider to be a beautiful body, myself, if you had that much love for Krishna, then how glorious your life would be. And these words struck him like a thunderbolt and completely changed his life, or rather brought it back on course. So Krishna spoke. Krishna, who is within the heart, guiding the devotee, also sometimes manifests as the guru outside, even in people who don't appear to be very spiritual, but Krishna can speak through them. Srila Prabhupada said that he was writing magazine, the magazine, Bhakti Godhead magazine, on the order of his guru. But when one librarian in Delhi, who almost certainly was a fairly ordinary kind of person, not an advanced spiritualist, when a librarian in Delhi advised Srila Prabhupada, not known as Prabhupada at that time, that better you write books, the magazine will be thrown away, the book will stay, it is lasting, then Srila Prabhupada recognized, my guru is speaking through this person. So Krishna may manifest himself through various persons. Within the heart of the devotee, he may make various situations by which the devotee comes to him. Many, many devotees have experienced that, how in their life there are various situations, apparent coincidences, by which they eventually came to the point of coming to Krishna. Krishna prepared them for that. So Krishna induces his devotees to follow the path of dharma. And even on a less dramatic day-to-day observance, Krishna, what we call in English the conscience, he induces the devotee, yes, you follow, do the right thing. That sense, I should do the right thing, because it is Krishna wants me to do, my guru wants me to do, my parents want me to do. Do the right thing. Of course, one should know, tasmat chastram pramanante karya karyam vivasit, gyatva, knowing, having known, gyatva shastram vidhanoktam, having known what are the rules given in shastra, karya kartamiharasi, one should act in this world. So one may say that, well, according to my conscience, but his conscience is mixed up and messed up with all ideas which are not correct. So it's not enough just to say according to my conscience, I consulted my own mind, but that can be very dangerous. One should know what are the rules of Shastra, be guided by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. But in many situations, one will have to make a decision, and Guru isn't there. One can't go away and spend years doing research. One has to make a decision on the spot. In that situation, one can take guidance from Krishna within the heart, and Krishna will direct the sincere devotee to do the right thing. So Krishna induces the devotee to follow dharma. And even if the devotee makes some mistake, Krishna will help him. Not that the devotee takes a license to behave sinfully, but Krishna will bring him back to the right path if he makes some mistake. Therefore, he says, Kaunteya Pratijani. No, that is the Apichet Sudaracharo Bhajate Mamananyabhak Sadhareva Samantavya Samyagvya Vasitohisa Kshipram Bhavati Dharma. Krishna says, even if someone who is preparing or wants to be my devotee, he's completely made the sankalpam, the commitment, the vow, I am only for serving Krishna. But if due to some bad habit or whatever, he slips into some even highly sinful activity, he should be considered saintly because of his dedication to me. And that will be seen, that very quickly he will stop performing such sinful activities. It's not a regular habit. Very soon he becomes dharmatma. He becomes a completely religious person in all respects. So one meaning of dharmakrit is that he induces his devotees to follow dharma. He leads them on the right path. Another meaning is that he himself practices dharma, and in this way he instructs others to do so also. He sets the perfect example. Apanena koile dharma shikhan na jai, as stated in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. One who does not himself practice dharma cannot teach others to do so. Another meaning of one who practices dharma is seen in the activities of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Sankirtan Pravartak. Sankirtan Pravartak Sri Krishna Chaitanya Jaracharashita Shaidhanna. He is the inaugurator of the Yuga Dharma of chanting, the congregational chanting of the holy names. Whoever follows him becomes glorious and blessed. So in that sense, he is also one who practices dharma. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by practicing the dharma, personally chanting with devotees, he teaches it to others. Also those verses I read from Bhagavad Gita, that series of verses, just before those three verses comes the famous yadyad acharati shreshtas tattadevetaro janaha sayat pramanam kurute lokas tad anuvartate. Krishna says, whatever acts are performed by a great person, common people follow. In other words, it's giving the idea that great persons, they should act in an exemplary manner to set a good example for others. And Krishna himself does that in so many ways. When we say he practices dharma or follows dharma, he observes dharma, it's different to the way in which others observe dharma, because we are under dharma. We are under the control of the laws of dharma. He is not. So his observance is something like that example you may have seen in the introduction to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. At Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he teaches religion. It's just like an instructor, a teacher in the class writes A, B, C on the blackboard, or shows the child how to write A, B, C. He's doing it to show the child. He doesn't need to himself. He's far above that level, but he does so to teach us. So in the same way, Krishna follows dharma to teach us, but actually, just like Krishna being the ideal householder, but that's also a manifestation of his spiritual lila. So the Varnashram system is a facsimile of the spiritual setup, the spiritual social. There's a social system in the spiritual world also. And it's within that social system that Krishna enjoys his pastimes. Of course, his highest pastimes, that of parakīya bhāv, relishing the bliss of apparently breaking dharma. That's the highest level. But that is not at all not to be imitated. I'll get back to that a little later. Because the perverted reflection of that in this world, just like that's the highest level of spiritual existence, so the inner reflection, the highest point becomes The highest point in the actual object becomes the lowest point in a reflection. So the highest level of spiritual existence is that of Krishna's apparently immoral, adharmic activities with the gopis of Vrindavan. But the perverted reflection of that, illicit sexual activity in this world, that is the lowest and most sinful. Just Krishna's activities in the spiritual world are all pure, and the reflection of that is impure. So varnashram practiced in this world is a system for it's at the border between spiritual and material. It's a system for regulating people in this world, impure people. It's for regulating the impure so that they can come to the pure platform. And Krishna teaches that, especially in his Dwaraka Leela, by living as an ideal householder, showing the ideal, particularly in the as a Kshatriya, prince. So those who are following the path of dharma, they shouldn't become proud that I'm a very great brahmana, or I'm a very great devotee. It's by his grace that we can do so, by his grace and by his example. Otherwise, we can't. Krishna is the, just as he is the supporter, he's behind the whole system. So he gives us strength by which we can follow that. So Krishna is above dharma. He's above adharma. He's beyond all such considerations. He is the absolute person who he cannot be judged by the ordinary laws. He is the transcendental autocrat, in the words of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. But nevertheless, he sets the example for others so that they can follow this. Now, there may be some objection to this. Well, Krishna appears to be very immoral sometimes. I mean, this whole idea of dancing with the gopis, and there are so many things. He ran away from the battle. That's not when he was Jarasandha was attacking Mathura. Krishna ran away. That's not proper for a kshatriya. Yudheyapya palayanam, mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna himself says that one should not, a kshatriya should not run away in battle. But Krishna himself had done so. And there are so many. After speaking Bhagavad Gita, Krishna induced the Pandavas, and especially Arjuna and Bhima, to kill first Bhishma and Drona, and then Duryodhana, Karna, Karna, and then Duryodhana by apparently adharmic means. So how is this to be reconciled? It seems that, well, Lord Ram, he's the personification. Sometimes some devotees of Ram say that. Well, Rama is very good, but Krishna, he's not good. Our Ram is better than your Krishna. There are so many accusations against Krishna. Actually, there are accusations against Ram also, but in his dealings with Sita. But they only came much later. Historically, no one blamed Ram except that washerman, who was a very sinful person. But there were no such complaints. It seems that came much later. In his dealing with Sita, giving her the test by fire, banishing her to the forest. So there are various accusations like that. But we can understand that Lord, these Lord Rama dealt with Sita Devi in this way for the very reason that he was showing the path of dharma. He wanted to show testing Sita by fire was to demonstrate her complete purity. He said, I had no doubts in your purity, but others did. So this is to show that. And also to demonstrate that a man, he should not keep an impure wife. Of course, if we say this nowadays, I don't know, it's quite possible you could even get a court case against you for saying such things. But that is the Vedic standard that Lord Rama showed. And also that for a king, as Caesar's, Srila Prabhupada often quoted from Shakespeare, Caesar's wife should be above suspicion. That a king, he should be seen to be spotless in this regard. If he, a truly righteous king, he has to set a standard of the highest moral standards, even if it appears unfair in other ways, to uphold dharma, to maintain the reputation of himself and his dynasty, so that people can have faith in him as a worthy king, properly representing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He must be prepared even causing distress to himself to act in a manner that will uphold dharma. Dharma or justice must not only be done, it must be seen to be done, is a quotation from, I believe, a British peer from the House of Lords, the ultimate court in the British legal system. So that principle is there in Lord Rama's Leela. That's considered the standard for a righteous king. That if his enemy's son does something very good, he can reward him. And if his own son does something bad, he must punish him. He's impartial. Justice is blind. That also is there in the Western understanding, the figure of justice with the blindfold. Justice is blind in the sense that there's no partiality. So Ram exhibited that. As far as Krishna's supposed immorality, well, that's a very big topic, and I plan to speak on that in upcoming talks on this subject, starting from tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada has written extensively about this, and indeed that's discussed extensively in Shastra. So I'll get back to that tomorrow. Is there any question about this now, please? Yeah, go ahead. Dharma is sometimes absolute and sometimes relative. Yeah, it's a very complex topic. In this world, that will be seen in the discussion of Krishna's apparent immorality. There are general rules which are to be followed always, but there's an exception to pretty much everything. That's in Krishna consciousness also. The only absolute rule to be followed is always to think of Krishna and never forget him. 16 rounds? Well, gopis aren't chanting 16 rounds. At least we never heard about that. If you just say there's some disaster or something, and all there's some attack by some hoodlums, you say, well, I can't do anything. I can't defend or I can't protect the divine. I have to chant my rounds, japa period. Sometimes Prabhu, it's an emergency. The pujari suddenly got fever. You have to come and, oh, I have to chant my rounds. So that may be the meat eating. Yeah, it may be in some circumstance. Unlikely. Apparently, Srila Prabhupada said, I'd rather die than eat meat. But it may be, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur authorized that, the serving of meat to British officials in Mayapur when they came, because they're accustomed to eat meat 3 times a day. He said, in London we can have a student's hostel, and we can serve meat because they're accustomed to eat meat. Let them come and hear about Krishna. In the beginning they can eat meat also. So there may be some. There may be, it's unusual, unlikely, not recommended, but there can be any rule, there can be some exception to that. The only rule, which is the one which we're trying to follow, and it's much easier to follow no meat eating than always thinking of Krishna, at least for a fallen soul like me. But that's really the only completely absolute rule. Other rules according to circumstances, there may be exceptions. Just due to the nature of this world. And if we want to get into talk about dharma, well, we could go on for many lifetimes. It's a very complex subject because it's subject to... The general rules are there, very clear, but there are various times, places, and circumstances by which the rules may be adjusted. Anything else? Ladies? Anyone? No. Yeah, I've got another question.
Yeah, well, there's an extension to that question, which is, you said that Brahmins get karma if they drink, and a bad karma, and if Shudras drink, then it's kind of okay for them.
It's kind of okay. It's not really okay for Shudras to drink alcohol, but they don't get such severe reactions.
How do you know who's who?
That's another whole question. But it's actually stated in Bhagavatam. What I just said about this is actually from... It's not my speculation. It's there in the Bhagavatam. How do you know who's who? Well, qualities of a Brahmin are given. You know what they are? You're a Shudra. Okay, you're a Brahmana. Samo dama tapasho cham kshantya arjavam evacha jnanam vijnanam astikyam brahma karma svabhavaja. And so that gives the qualities by which they work. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna just says, he doesn't say the qualities by which the Shudras work. They don't really have that much qualities, but their only duty is paricharya, service to others. Basic definition of a Shudra is shochati iti Shudra, one who laments, one who is attached to this material world and thus is always on the platform of lamentation. There are many paradoxes. There are many paradoxes in the observance of dharma. We'll come to that in discussing Krishna's apparent irreligiosity.
We have the ability to fall down or not. We could cook potatoes or we could run screaming naked in the streets. So what people have a problem with is that we were never given the choice whether to have free will or not.
When you don't have the choice whether to have free will or not. Well, that's like saying we don't have the choice. You could go into an infinite regression with this. Do you have the choice to have the choice to have free will or not? And then if you have the choice to have the choice, well, we didn't have the choice to have the choice to have the choice to have free will or not. See where we're going with this? It's not very promising, is it? that's like saying we don't have the choice whether to be alive or not. Because to be conscious means to have desire. Yeah? So, if you want, you can... Srila Prabhupada said that mayavadis, they can become stones in their next life. So if you're not happy with free will, you can become a mayavadi and become a stone.
No, I was asking on behalf of people.
It's like the question, why is there anything? Why is there anything? Because Krishna wants to love. He wants others to be happy with and to love with. So we have the choice to love Krishna and be happy or not. We exist for Krishna's pleasure, not for our own pleasure. I am not the center of the universe, and nor are you, and nor is anyone who asks this question. We are subservient beings. Yeah? We're under the dictate of a cosmic dictator. Fortunately, he's a benevolent dictator. So free will, if we use it properly, can be a greatest asset. If we misuse it, then we ask questions like that. We come up with questions like that. What other questions from the realm of deep mental speculation have you got?
I'm inspired by this wonderful talk.
Okay, do some more speculation. Come back tomorrow. No, Srila Prabhupada said philosophical speculation is okay, but not mental speculation. Yeah, okay, he also explained that. Philosophical speculation is when we try to understand how Krishna is great, how the statements of Shastra are correct. And mental speculation is where you have no basis. You're just afloat on the manoratha, the chariot of the mind, just wandering here and there in the realms of abstract thought, coming up with one philosophy, and then another philosophy to rebut that, and then another modification of that, and it just goes on and on and on, without recognizing that we are subservient to the supreme controller. Without understanding that, all our philosophy is meaningless. This whole idea of equality and free will without any reference to the fact that we are controlled beings gives rise to all kinds of strange ideas. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.